Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Paul Hamilton.
Rob Ray joins Chopin Bulldog game days at 4. Howard and Jeremy welcome Marty Biron Thursday mornings at 7:30 on WGR Sports Radio 550.
And there they all are right there. What's in there? Sal Capaccio's in there. Jeremy White, Chopin the Bulldog. There's Alan Davis, John and Brian Cozio, Pat Malacaro. Whole crew is in there.
Really?
And you know what? Paul is the only one upstairs working. The rest of the guys are on vacation. Working now.
That game came up earlier today in here during the course of our show, talking about the Wild, who the Sabres were playing that night, losing, we believe it was Mikko Koivu to an injury, right? He got hurt, and at that time I was still, the Sabres were not, well, they were spiraling, but they weren't plummeting yet. Is that like, it was still salvageable at that point, and I was hot on the trail of Charlie Coyle, who eventually got traded to Boston about a week before the deadline. But when that injury happened that night to the Wild and to Koivu, I thought, well, they're not trading Charlie Coyle now, so forget it. The Sabres had a need at that position, obviously, at that time. They didn't make any trade, and eventually Coyle did get traded, as I said. Paul Hamilton is on the Wester Hotline now with me. Paul's appearance is brought to you by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys, working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers. Hi, Paul. How are you?
How are you? That trade's worked out better more in the playoffs than it did in the regular season,
right?
Didn't it? Coyle's actually looking at yeah, he had 2 goals and 6 points in 21 games with the
right.
Bruins in the regular season, and really had 34 points all year, but has excelled, I think, in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But I you had that idea, and I didn't like it at all because I just didn't like his season, but yeah. I have liked his playoff.
Yeah, he's been good for them in the playoffs. They're getting scoring all over the place. Funny, I saw, did you happen to see the quote from Pete DeBoer, the San Jose coach? Of course, they lost last night, all banged up, that team. No Pavelski, which to me was the right call. He had another head injury on top of the head injury he had in the first round. The idea that he could be a game-time decision, I think they were just playing games, trying to, you know, throw the opponent off. Maybe he'll play.
No question.
There's no way you're putting that guy out there. And that no Carlson, no Hurdle. I mean, they were really banged up. But DeBoer, after the game, was complimenting, like, heavy hockey and size. There's no room to move out there. And look at the two teams that are left. They both play, you know, this heavy hockey. And you know, I don't know. Like, Boston
yeah.
is physical, but the thing is...
Are they?
Reasonably so.
Reasonably, but they're not that...
No,
physical.
They've got the size that they do have is good, and they're getting production that Fort Corrali score. Like, they're getting goals from guys you've barely heard of, and so guys that might be traditionally viewed as just energy guys are giving them goals, and so they've got all this production. But yeah, I don't think they're winning because they're pushing anyone around. I mean, I can't speak to what DeBoer went through with his team against St. Louis. I mean, I know St. Louis dominated the last couple of games of that series, you know, last night, poor San Jose. But even game five, San Jose had their lineup, although Carlson was banged up. And, I mean, they just got boat raced.
Well, I texted Jeremy this last night, and he agreed 100%. I'll see if you do. Totally reminded me of Sabres Hurricanes, where the Hurricanes in the conference finals ran out the same lineup for every game, never got an injury, had the same guys. And the Sabres had 5 defensemen sitting in the stands with Tim Connelly,
right?
And it totally reminded, because the Blues had 1 injury to Dunn on defense,
right?
And really have gone injury free. And you already reeled off all the injuries the Sharks had, It totally reminded me of that series.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out, even when Carlson was able to play in Game 5, he played 2 minutes or so in the third period.
In the second.
Right, and the game was out of hand, so it made sense with his injury to do that, but they barely had him, is all I'm saying, in Game 5. Yeah, I think that that works. And, you know, Carolina did... Well, I don't know. Talinder got hurt on a body check by Mark Recchi, but like the rest of it was just sort of weird stuff, you know. Right, capped of course by Jay McKee.
Was that the Pominville injury too when he got cut on the back of the leg?
No, that was against Philly.
That was against Philly.
Much
okay,
later.
I couldn't
yeah.
remember.
Yeah, that was like the 2000. That was much later.
I just remember Conley. Just such a devastating. Forget about all the defensemen. It was such a devastating injury to them at the time.
Yeah,
but. With it all combined, it
right.
was crazy.
So now we've got here, maybe Joe wants to take part in this too, Paul. I don't know if you, just on the spur of the moment, I didn't prep you for this. I've been just thinking about Stanley Cup Finals appearances and, you know, winning it, obviously. There's a pretty long list of teams that have never won the Stanley Cup. I think I counted 14 teams in the league who've never won it. There are 4 teams that have never even been in the Stanley Cup Final. And I'm wondering if you follow the league. You they're all pretty gettable.
I got to remember teams. Columbus.
Columbus is one.
I think we have to count the Minnesota Wild here.
Yep, yeah. the Minnesota Wild are
two.
Those two teams came in the league the same year, 2000-2001.
Arizona.
It's funny, Arizona on the Wikipedia page here is listed at 38 seasons because they were Winnipeg, and then Winnipeg is the fourth. So I don't want to try to trick you with that. Winnipeg, since they came back in, has not been to the finals either. But they're carrying Arizona for 38 seasons because from 79 to 80 until whenever they moved to Arizona, 96, 97, whenever that was, they never got there either.
Well, the Blues were an expansion team that got to the finals.
3 times in a row.
Because... Right. Everybody was an expansion team in the West, so somebody had to go, and they got waxed twice in a row by the Canadiens, 4-0, and then the Bruins.
4-0
And people might remember, especially if you've been by Boston's arena and see the statue of Bobby Orr flying through the air. A lot of people wouldn't remember it personally, but might remember seeing a film of it or seeing the statue. They were playing the Bruins and the Blues were playing in that one when Bobby Orr scored the game-winning goal in Game 4 to complete the sweep.
I overcooked it. It's 12 teams that have never won the Cup, not 14. That's it. The 4 that I mentioned, and then there's 8 others that have you know, never won it either. So anyway, so Paul, we've been all day today. Mostly sort of revisiting, retrying, if you will, the Ryan O'Reilly trade. And so, you know, he's a Selke Trophy finalist. He had a great year and he had 3 assists last night, and the Blues are going to the Stanley Cup final. And, like, there's no way I think you can argue that the Sabres didn't get their heads caved in that trade, but I also think you can defend having to make it. And I still would make it. I would hope to make a better trade, at least as of now, than I made. But I still think if you ask me, honestly, as nuts as it might sound, considering what's going on, I would still make the trade. I think they made the trade for good reasons.
Yeah. On May 22nd, 2019, it's a bad trade. And the trade's not over. I mean, I still wonder what Thompson can do if he puts his mind to it. If he decides he wants to put the time in the off season, 2 players have not been drafted yet, a first round pick and a second round pick. The other 2 were throw ins. I don't even consider them.
There is another.
If you want to make the trade, you've got to take these 2.
I'm sorry. There's another pick there. We missed that all day long. I forgot that there is.
Yeah, it's a first and a second round pick.
Okay.
So yeah, as of today, they've lost to the trade, but I don't judge trades that way, any of them. You know, when Murray made trades, you paid too much for O'Reilly, you paid too much for Kane. I don't know. Let's find out. Let's talk about it in 3-4 years, and we'll figure out if they paid too much. What if Brendan Gooley becomes what I think he possibly could, and then the number 1 pick does really well for the Ducks? Well, then that trade doesn't look too good, even if Montour plays really well for the Sabres. So, you know, I kind of wait until trades are done before I am going to rip somebody or judge somebody. But, yeah, there's no question. As of today, that trade is not a good trade.
Paul Hamilton is on the Wester hotline here with me. Would you – I don't know. How much can you – like light can you shed on why they felt they needed to move O'Reilly? Like, I think you can make the case from just we need to shake up our lineup and he's got value and he doesn't have a no move so we can do what we want here and – you know, from a hockey standpoint, I think you can sort of sell it, but it has always felt to me like words like toxic were being thrown around about the locker room last year, and I take that to heart. Like, I respect that. So, like, why do you think they felt they needed to move on from him?
Well, for those who think it was because of his comments in April when they were cleaning out their lockers, they were trying to trade him at the trade deadline. He hadn't made the comments yet. So, you know, that wasn't why they traded him.
I do think, though, Paul,
it may have pushed him over the edge to keep going with it.
Yeah, I think like that's the moment where you completely lose me. Like you stand there in front of your teammates, in front of the fans, in front of the whole organization, ownership, and say you've lost your love for the game. I mean, that to me, there's no turning back in pro sports in 2019 or 2018. I think he knew what he was saying when he said that. That was as clear as get me out of here.
And he had two or three days to think about it before he got in front of those cameras, too. He knows the questions they're going to be asking him. He's stupid. He knows what he's going to be asked. But still,
but they were trying.
And that goes hand in hand with he didn't want to be the guy behind Jack Eichel. He wants to be the man. And he doesn't want to be the guy that's behind the superstar. So that's part of it. When he was in the lineup, they were last in the league and were able to draft Rasmus Dahlin. So he never, ever played like he did in St. Louis. Now, part of that is because he had a better team in St. Louis.
Sure.
Talking to him, he credits Tarasenko with a lot of his success. He never had a winger like Tarasenko, either in Colorado or in Buffalo, you know, playing like that. He didn't go into those long, prolonged slumps that he would always go in every single year, which that's why I would always say, and Mike would rightfully say to me, you know, I'd say this guy, you know, well, lo and behold, I was the guy that was pounding that door for I don't know how long, and he was over 80 this year.
Right.
So,
well, the line mates are a big part of that. I mean, he didn't.
But he never. The problems he had on the ice here, he would talk about after games. And I'd be sitting there, and he'd be saying, you know, the same stuff we heard all the time. He's got to be better. But then he'd talk about some of the things that he did on the ice, and I'm shaking my head going, yeah, you did. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. You know, he wasn't as anywhere near it. You know, because they were losing in the beginning of the year. I mean, they were in last place when it rolled. Because he was the man. He was the number one center. So you know, there's you know, ways to look at it, and I don't want to take anything away from him because he has done well this year. He has done what I expected when he was in Buffalo, when he was putting up 60 some odd points. I would say to you guys, that's not good enough. He should be better than that. He should be a better player than 60 some odd points. Well, he showed us this year that he is better than that because, you know, things went right for him. He got his head screwed on straight, better players. And he didn't go into any of those prolonged slumps. And I've seen some of the defensive problems with the Blues crop up now. And it cropped up in the Winnipeg series for a while. When Winnipeg took over, he was a big part of that. He got absolutely dominated by Scheifele's line for about 2.5 periods. And I thought to myself, boy, where have I seen this before? And, you know, then all of a sudden St. Louis took over the series after Winnipeg did what they did and it looked like Winnipeg was going to take it. Then St. Louis turned it around and they all turned their games around. It wasn't just him. And, you know, started playing better. They needed to give Tarasenko again. So, you know, give them deal with too many injuries. And usually
about the Blues and Ryan O'Reilly making me today. And I feel like I might have thought of this and even made it a little bit of a talking point at different points in the season. But I wanted to mention it again today, given, you know, we're talking about like a team like the Sabres moving O'Reilly for the reasons they did, you know, the fit, culture, chemistry, all that sort of stuff. And it strikes me that Skinner was kind of the same thing in Carolina. You know, like Brind'Amour took over, and there was a lot of talk about grit and grind and guys that want to play the right way and all this sort of stuff. And it, you know, they end up trading Skinner for, I mean, really, what is the return on that? I mean, there's draft picks there, but holy
cow.
Well,
they Cliff Pooh, who they have since traded for nothing. They traded them away for future considerations, which, as Rob Ray can tell you, is nothing.
Right?
They're never. When he got traded for future considerations, nothing ever came back.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you look at the Skinner situation, though. People in Carolina are snickering at the Sabres right now. They think the Sabres are out of their minds.
Sure.
It's like this guy is not, you know, look at what we've been able to accomplish when he's gone.
Right.
And he's a one-way player who's going to kill you. I know the Carolina broadcasters, really, every time the Sabres played Carolina, as soon as Skinner would make a mistake. Now, he scored, I believe, 4 goals against Carolina during the season, maybe 5. But as soon as he would make a mistake in the defensive zone, they were just all over him. And I know that because people were telling me that on – you know, they'd be Twitter. You should hear these guys. I mean, they are just killing. And I go, you got to remember who signs their checks. I mean, they're trying to make a trade that is, you know, they traded away what could be a 40-50 goal scorer at the time, early in the season, and you know, they're trying to make it look good for the Hurricanes, and that's the way, you know, they're going about doing it. But, you know, they're kind of looking at it like, well, look at what we were able to accomplish without him. Not that it was all his fault or anything.
Of course,
but
right.
Even though he got 4 goals against the Hurricanes, they were just demolishing him during those games against the Canes.
So I like that happened. And, of course, they went the other way. The Sabres traded away O'Reilly, and they had a terrible year. The Hurricanes, I think, you know, coincidentally, I think Jeff Skinner maybe could have still helped them to some extent, but I think they moved him for culture, for chemistry, for not being a two-way player and committing to defense and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
and in O'Reilly's case too, they did want to. I think for what they wanted in the game, they wanted to push the puck up ice, and O'Reilly at the time wasn't doing it real well for them because he didn't. So I think they thought they weren't getting their money's worth for what they were paying him. And I think they felt, or I think Botterill felt, that they could spend that money better.
Yep.
You know, they could do a better job with that money than spending it on Ryan O'Reilly. So it might be better just to trade him, give me that money back, and we'll spend it in other ways. Now, it's his job to spend it, and people will say, well, then why isn't Skinner signed? And you know it all. You sit there every day. I don't need to tell you what people are saying.
No, Paul, go on. read me your mentions from your Twitter feed. That's what I really want to know. That's what I really want to hear. All right, so Bruins Blues. I mean, you know, it's hockey, so to an extent, I want to say flip a coin. I've all around the goalie's going great, so I would bet on the Bruins here. I think they're a slight favorite. What do you think about the series?
I've never seen Rask play this well. I've always thought Rask was the problem for them. That in the end, he would kind of let them down. But I just consistently in this playoff, I've just never seen him play that well. But you can say the same thing about Binghamton.
Yep.
You know, Jordan Binghamton came in January and hasn't looked back. Now, there have been some slips by him during the playoffs.
Uh-huh.
You know, when the Blues haven't played well, maybe he hasn't played well. But he seems to get his game back fairly quickly. And that's the thing. Both teams are getting the big save at the big times, which you obviously need if you're going to do things in the playoffs. I mean, the Sharks were devastated by injuries, but look at their goaltending. I mean, Jones came back in the Colorado series and really did play well. 5 out of the 7 games, he did make the big saves for him.
Yep.
But then there were other times in the other two series where he didn't, and it was just way too inconsistent save. But that's what they brought you in to do. They because they need the big save at the big time, And, you know, they weren't able to get it, which they are getting right now.
Yeah. I mean, nobody really saw Bennington's career. It's not like he was some hot up-and-coming prospect. Like, he's not super old.
They didn't find
old.
A place for him last
right,
year.
Right.
They sent him to Providence to play with Providence
right.
because they already had two goalies on their right. HL team. They couldn't yeah. even find a place for the guy.
A funny position, don't I know it. All right, Paul, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for this, and we'll cheer, bud.
Take care.
There's Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline to buy, again, Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys, working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers. We will back to football. And Mike Clay, ESPN fantasy expert, is going to Mike Shope. I'm the Bulldog. This is WGR.
Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
That question right there continues to go unanswered. Frustratingly.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Since we don't know what we're talking about, and that's probably just been recorded right there. Okay, Mike Shope and the Bulldog, welcome back. Happy as always to have Mike Clay with us from ESPN at Mike Clay NFL. Mike joins us via the West Her Hotline. Mike, how are you today? Hello, Mike. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, we got you now. Yeah, sorry about that. Thank you for joining us. So we were just looking at this latest projections from you, which I'm looking at the fantasy one where there's a paragraph on each guy, and that is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Mike, I mean, that is a great job.
And by we, he means me too, because I've got it open on my desktop
yes.
as well. I'm scanning through here.
I appreciate it. There's certainly no off season for most of us analysts out here. So you guys know you're busy. You're busy year round. So keeping at it. A lot of writing to do, but it's fun. You know, it's football for a job. Love it.
Have you gotten? Are there a couple players you've been writing about this off season that are generating? I guess just to ask the question, I'll use the word backlash. Like, are that the most people more than anyone else you're writing about? You have fans asking you how you could think that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest problem area is quarterback. And I think it's easy to say, okay, hey, you have, you know, Phillip Rivers 17th. That's way too low. Or Tom Brady, how could you have him outside the top 12? Or, you know, things like that. Kirk Cousins 20th. How is that even possible? Jimmy Garoppolo 22nd. Josh Allen 23rd. It doesn't make sense. But the problem is think about all them names and think about everybody else that's available. It's just it's a pass-heavy league. Running the ball as a quarterback is more important than ever in fantasy because, you know, if you don't, you're just going to get passed out by inferior passers, but just guys who can add those fantasy points that way. So that's a really, really deep position, and it's so many spots. You know, we're ranking these guys. And really, I think, look at it, a quarterback is in tears. I mean, you just have to. If you don't want to take Mahomes or Watson or a stud like that, you just have to wait until the end of the draft because there's so many similar options.
So how much did Mahomes impact last year? I mean, the stats were just phenomenal. Does he go earlier than the first quarterback has gone prior to last year?
I mean, we've seen kind of a change the last couple of years. I mean, 5 years ago, it was not uncommon for a guy like Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers to go at the end of the first round. But that has changed. People are getting smarter. Mahomes, I think you'll see some people, you know, I think as more casual fans play, you'll see him go earlier, maybe in round two or perhaps at the end of round one. I've seen that a few times. But his ADP right now, with people spending a few bucks on best ball leagues, is in the third round. So that sounds about right. You know, that's probably a conservative number. Again, I could see him going a little earlier. I would not take him there. I have some concerns. I actually have a column coming out on this. You know, I think there's a lot of reasons to be a little bit concerned about Mahomes this season. Come crashing back to earth. He'll still be great. He'll still be an MVP candidate. But statistically, it's going to be hard for him to produce what he did last season. And even if he comes down by, you know, say 10 touchdowns, which is not unreasonable, he's not going to be worth a second or third round pick in fantasy draft.
Right, yeah. 40 touchdowns is still an incredible year. for any NFL quarterback, even the best ones, that's an incredible year. I'd imagine Tariq Hill is at the front of the line for reasons to be worried about Mahomes regressing.
I mean, we'll see on him. I didn't factor that in too aggressively right now. If you look at the projections on the site, you guys, as mentioned, are looking at those with the capsule. So if you look at those, Hill's projection is for 12 games. And again, I'm kind of hedging there. I mean, it could be more, obviously. So we'll see how that plays out. So for now, Mahomes is impacted by Hill missing time, but not significantly yet. It's more just, you look back at the history of the NFL and guys who have thrown 45 plus touchdowns in that range, offenses that have scored, 50, 60 touchdowns a season, those all come crashing back to earth pretty significantly the next season. And we're talking about offenses led by Tom Brady. Think about that 2007 season, Peyton Manning a few years ago, that amazing season he had, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. These are the quarterbacks that at their peak had seasons similar to what Mahomes did last year. And the next year, the average drop-off in touchdowns for those guys was right around 14 touchdowns. We're talking almost a touchdown per game. And we're talking about some of the best ever in NFL history. So there's definitely reasons to believe that, again, even with a great season, his statistics just won't be close to what they were last year.
With Mike Clay of ESPN, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog on WGR. Mike, let's talk about the Bills. How did you figure out how to lay out their projections on offense? How did you get to where you got?
It's definitely tricky for a few reasons. I mean, starting with quarterback, I mean, can we expect Josh Allen to keep up that rushing pace he had last year? I mean, it caught us all by surprise, and then you thought, well, he can't keep this up, can he? And he just did, week after week after week. So you have to kind of weigh that in with his passing efficiency, which was a struggle last season, but, perhaps he takes a step forward this season. So that made him a little bit tricky for sure. You look at the running back position, who knows? I think running back and wide receiver are kind of similar in that there's a lot of bodies, which is probably a good problem for the Bills to have. Not really a problem, but for fantasy prognostication, it's tricky, right? So it sounds like McCoy will be back as the lead back. You have Frank Gore, who, again, I don't think he went from Buffalo to Miami to kind of chill on the sideline, right? He's going to be involved in some capacity. T.J. Yeldon, they signed a two-year deal. And, of course, they draft Devin Singletary, who is probably the future of the backfield. So that's four guys kind of battling for snaps. It's kind of tough to figure out how to distribute touches there. And again, same thing at wide receiver. You sign Cole Beasley, you sign John Brown, and then you have the incumbents, Robert Foster, who was a nice find last season, as well as Zay Jones, who has that second-round pedigree. So right now I have John Brown just ahead of Cole Beasley in terms of the projected leader in targets, but only with 90, and I have Foster fourth with 57. But if you told me they were going to be the opposite, that would not shock me by any means. You know, it's just, again, there's four guys kind of competing for three spots, if you will, when they're throwing the football. Generally, they're going to have three on the field. So it's kind of a tough one to sort out at this point in the offseason.
Mike, we're just talking about Marcus Mariota, and I was just observing that. It seems like as somebody myself that has backed him, so to speak, I've often had shares of Mariota, that this year I'm just finding most analysts are sort of off the bandwagon, so to speak. What did you do with him?
Yeah, he's a tricky one for sure, guys. It's kind of, like some categories he looks good and others he looks terrible, right? So 24 touchdowns and 23 interceptions passing over the past two seasons. But you look at completion rate and yards per attempt, and he's been, in the upper, like the 65th percentile of the league. So there's some good, there's some bad. He obviously has some value with his leg, but, those interceptions and the injury problems have been a concern. Obviously, they bring in Ryan Tannehill as well, so you're worried if he comes out slow or gets nicked up again, they can maybe turn it over to Tannehill. So definitely some concerns. And as mentioned before, quarterback is so deep that you don't really have to take that chance this year.
Can you offer can you wing it for a quick dynasty ranking, Mike, of the quarterbacks from last year's draft? Mayfield, who would probably be one, Darnold, Allen, Rosen, Jackson, that's the draft order. Maybe even throw Kyler Murray in there too if you want. Or Haskins. How do those, if you're for a dynasty league, is there a standout there for you? Mayfield maybe, or where you're at on Rosen is interesting as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions after Baker. I would definitely put Baker one. I would put Kyler Murray two. I'm just a big fan, and again, just what he adds with his legs. I he He's aware of my projection for him. I have him right around 100 carries for this season, and he thought that was way too low.
He thinks
he's going to be running at a lot of guests. So we'll see about that. Definitely a guy with a lot of confidence and a lot of talent. So I do like him as a prospect. So I'd go Mayfield and Murray. From there, I would probably lean toward, I guess, Sam Darnold would be next. Again, I'm just I felt like he and Mayfield were similar prospects last year. He's still very young. He's like a year and a half younger than Mayfield. So there's still a lot of hope there. I like him.
All right, our thanks to Mike Clay again for all of that. We'll take a timeout here and hear from Sal Capaccio about the goings-on at the NFL owners' meetings after this on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
All right, Sal joins us now, and the first thing we had there in sports, this claim that the Bills put in on Jordan Leggett. I know, Sal, we covered... Hi, by the way.
Hi, Mike.
So, we talked about tight ends yesterday, and the Bills lost tight end Tyler Kroft to an injury. He'll be out until about the beginning of the season. How will that work? That's one question here. I want to ask you about like the waiver claim, too, but how will that work? There's the PUP list. Do you have this down so that... When will the Bills have to decide, and what will it mean to decide like whether Tyler Kroft is physically... able or unable to play for them?
I always refresh myself at training camp, but basically, if I remember correctly, the PUP list, you basically put them on there before training camp starts, basically, and then they're eligible to come off at any time, but they don't, once they start on there, they're not basically counting against, you know, you can keep them on there basically through the final cuts and stuff like that.
Right, and it allows you to carry extra guys. Right.
And I'm only asking
basically,
you,
yeah.
For the summer anyway, yeah.
I'm only asking you this pup list question because of your crack about our update, by the way. I wanted to see if I could
stick
it
to
you.
I will tell you about the waiver claim, though, since you
yes.
asked, and I do know you enjoy things like this.
So. I guess you should be allowed to say something you know about, so go ahead.
It is done by the draft order until week 4, at which time they then go by the inverse order of standings.
Okay. So it's not. I'm going to guess that it's not surprising to you that the Bills would have put a claim in on a tight end that's played in the league.
No, I don't. I'm not surprised that they would try to add to the position after what happened with Tyler Kroft, and I'm definitely not surprised they would do it in a manner in which it would not cost them an asset.
Right.
They could still do that, of course. But if it's a free guy and he's out there, then, you know, they might want to bring him in. There could very well be other guys out there that they want to bring somebody in. So I don't see right now. It could very well, you know, turn around tomorrow and trade for Kyle Rudolph, for all I know. But I would think right now they're probably slow playing and seeing how these other guys perform and saying, if we can add to the group without giving up an asset, that would be the preferable option at this point.
Is there any kind of a ballpark out there that's been speculated about for what it might cost to trade for Kyle Rudolph?
I haven't seen one, but just thinking about who he is, his age, the money, all that kind of stuff, I would think it'd have to be a late-round pick. I can't imagine really anybody giving up anything more than, I would say, a fourth would might even be high, but that might be the high end of it.
And by the way, I saw today that he was going to report to their practices, and I think he said that he's been offered a contract now, which was unexpected, but he might even be staying there. So here's the thing about the if we're done on tight end, I am.
I'm good.
Here's the thing on Here's the thing on the overtime rule. So maybe you know this from going to these meetings or you just know it. The story on the overtime rule, the Chiefs proposed that there be a rule change and that each team be guaranteed one possession in overtime. And of course the Chiefs had their season end when New England marched down the field on them in overtime in the AFC Championship. And the story is that there would not be a vote on this. So you have, like, levels, apparently, where there's a level, you make the proposal however you make it, and then ultimately there's a level at which it's voted on. And somehow it was decided here by the owners, apparently. The owners did not support this sufficiently that the Chiefs' proposal for the overtime rule change would not even be voted on. Like, we're not even going to actually put
it's
that
clear,
to the group.
It's clear we don't have enough support to get the thing through, so forget it.
Yeah, like, I just wonder about the logistics of that. Like, So you just, it's not as easy. It's not as, there's more to it than just you make a proposal and they vote. Because here the league went, yeah, we just are not even going to bother. And that's just kind of almost funny to me that that would happen.
Yeah, it seems like it's just basically, and these things happen at the other league meetings too, when they have some of these rules that they vote on and things like that, which are, well, it never really came up. Or a team rescinded a proposal because it definitely wasn't going to be able to pass. So I think that instead of going through the motion of it, they basically do that. And then maybe also at the same time, it gives people who want to propose a rule a chance to sit back and maybe recraft something about that rule that they want to propose. So you're right. It's not as simple as, hey, here's a rule. We're going to vote on it. We've had this before where the last couple of years there were a couple different things. I don't remember off the top of my head which ones they are, where there's been a rule that seemed like it was proposed on the table. Then we get to the owners' meetings week. This is the one in March, the owners' meetings that I go to. And then they say, yeah, we never even really voted on it because it was clear it wasn't going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is it surprising to you that this didn't get further than that? I mean, weren't they just talking about doing it for only the playoffs, right?
That's correct, and it's not surprising. It just never had enough legs, even back at the March owners' meetings. They basically said at that time that there wasn't enough support coming from people in the league, and they were going to table it, but even then it was always thought that it wasn't going to pass once they got to May.
Right. Well, it wasn't like a hill I needed to die on or anything, but I'm relieved. I was not up in arms about how the AFC Championship game ended. I think the NFC title game ended with New Orleans having the ball first. Did it not? So,
yes.
And they got stopped or turned it over, whatever it was that happened there. And, I know the big story in that game was the other rules proposal, the pass interference idea. And I don't know, has there been anything on that today as far as tweaking that goes, Sal?
Yeah, I think that we just talked about the pass interference thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been, and I saw yesterday, I don't know if it was official today, that they were going to basically, and I think that's what it's going to come down to, is there's no more automatic review in the last 2 minutes. It still has to be by a coach's challenge, okay, even in the last 2 minutes, because coaches basically are afraid that if that's the case and it's automatic review, then we're going to get to a point where it's like a basketball game in the final 2 minutes where there's just so many stoppages of play. And you think about it, it makes sense. What happens in the last 2 minutes? It's throwing and throwing and throwing and six defensive backs and five and six pass catchers and people running into each other. I mean, we're really going to stop every play and say we need an automatic review. So they don't want that to happen. So they want to keep it, okay, you know what, in this particular instance for this penalty, now you still have to challenge it, and you still have enough challenges to do so remaining in the final 2 minutes.
Thank you, Sal, coming on short notice. And before you go, would you like to say something about what feelings you have or think most fans have watching Ryan O'Reilly win with the Blues? Like, is it for you? At least it is for me professionally, if not personally. Personally, it's a little insane, but professionally, like, we're revisiting that the Sabres traded him. Of course, fans and bars are going to be talking about that watching the Blues. So where are you on his being traded and what's happened since?
I was all for him being traded. I felt the minute he said those comments at the end of the year that the best thing for him and the organization was to make a change. So I don't regret that position. I still think it was better. Obviously, the results haven't mattered and it hasn't changed. And that's what happens sometimes when you make trades. And maybe Tage Thompson will become something or whatever, but he certainly was a very good player. It was never the fact that I never recognized that he wasn't a good enough player. I just think there were too many things going on that it seemed like he was the thing that had to be removed based on all the other factors that go into who can be traded and things like that. Now that he's in St. Louis, I'm rooting for the Blues to win, not because of Ryan O'Reilly, but just because I freaking hate the Boston Bruins, man. I grew up in Adams Division, I mean, that's the way it goes. So I don't want to see the Bruins win it. And I think St. Louis is a cool story from where they were this year. I think it's a good hockey town. And if Ryan O'Reilly wins, I don't think it's an indictment on what happened trading him. And I think it was the right move to trade him. We can say that they didn't get enough for him. I think that's a valid argument, but I don't think it was the wrong move at the time, given all the circumstances to move him.
Okay. Very good. And I say go Blues. Never since 1970 in the finals. It seems like they have at least adequate, if not good, fan support,
it,
you know?
It is. I'm glad you said that about the market, Sal. Like, yep. You're following stuff that I've been following as Owen has grown. And, you know, we've been more and more interested in different leagues and stuff. You see a lot of St. Louis area kids, and even from their AAA organization, it's the St. Louis Blues, much like the Buffalo Junior Sabres. And, like, they got kids all over the place. Like, they are – I'm going to say it's a hotbed. Like it has really grown. It, you know, for a long time it was Minnesota, Boston. I think St. Louis is next on that list now.
Yeah, and real quick, I put this out there last night. You guys might already know this, but Boston and St. Louis, those cities, the only two cities to ever match up in all four, the Super Bowl, Major League Baseball, World Series, NBA Finals, and Stanley Cup. And it already happened in the Stanley Cup, obviously, back in 70. And now it's happening again, but they're the only cities that have ever matched up in all four championships in the sports.
Buffalo and Dallas, halfway there.
There we go.
Just a little more time. Thank you, Sal.
You're welcome.
There you go, Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline with us and his appearance. Brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? All right, our thanks to Sal. We'll be back tomorrow at 3. Stay tuned. The Nightcap with Sneaky Joe is away on WGR.
And tomorrow starts the same old thing again. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again.
Gentlemen, be free.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.